Podcasts are an independent way for podcasters like me to bring a local voice to your ears. At the Spent the Rent podcast, we strive to raise awareness of topics that affect the often underrepresented. Our title sponsor, Oregon Cashflow Pro, offers free money management advice that can help you take control of your finances. At OregonCashflowPro.com, you will find videos to guide you towards your goal of financial freedom. For more info, there will be a link in the show notes. The following podcast is available on all major streaming sites, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. You can now listen to all previous episodes, donate to the podcast, and buy shirts directly from the Spent the Rent podcast at our newly designed official website, strpod.com.
You are listening to the Spent the Rent podcast, and now here's your host, Patty Rose.
Hello and welcome to the Spent the Rent podcast. I am your host, Patty Rose. My guest today is a dear friend of the podcast, Blair Conrad. Blair, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So this is a little bit of a recap episode. I had you on the podcast back in 2018, and like I said, you are a good friend of mine. We've been friends for 22 years. A lot of those years were blurry, about 11, so 2020 doesn't count, so we've been friends for 9 years, and I wanted to have you on the podcast to talk about the topsy-turvy life that has been Blair Conrad. This is a success story, and a story of redemption, and I just really wanted to have you want to share what's happening with your life. If anybody is unfamiliar with your story, we're going to do a little bit of a quick recap. You were the guest on my show back in 2018. It was episode number 14 for anybody who wants to go back and check it out. But it's by far my most popular episode. It hit, you know, multiple countries. I mean, this is a local show, but your story was so relatable for so many people that it reached a lot of people. And the episode was called Homeless in Eugene. So let's talk about back. It was 2015 was the time that we were talking about.
I was unhoused in 2015 and 2016, but it all started in 2014.
Okay. So talk about where you were at. You were living on the streets, and you can talk about it more.
Yeah. So the way that this all went down so quickly is I had lost two of my grandparents and had major back surgery in 2014. And the grief from losing my grandparents was unfathomable to me. I had never lost anybody close to me before that. And both of their deaths hit me really hard. And then I also had back surgery, and I was on a lot of opiate medication for that. So I decided, let's not forget the unmedicated schizophrenia.
Right.
So that is what told me to quit opiates by using meth. And for some reason, I kept telling myself while I was in my addiction that I was supposed to be doing meth. I was supposed to be addicted. I was supposed to be on the streets. So that's a whole nother story. But anyways, I experienced houselessness for 2 years. And during that time, I met my now husband. And what changed everything was the day that I found out I was pregnant. I looked at the pregnancy tests, and it was one of those epiphany moments where it's like you can, like, everything can change right now, right? Or you can stay the same and ruin the life of this child inside you. So I took that as a positive message, and I went back to my tent and I packed everything that I could in my backpack, and I went to go find housing. Me and my husband, he was my boyfriend at the time, we were sleeping on couches, we were renting rooms, we were sleeping outside still, and we finally got our own housing in October of 2017. So it was a struggle. We didn't have the money to move in. We actually got our moving in money, the first last in deposit from St. Vincent de Paul's First Place Family Center. They were the ones that made it so that we could get stable housing.
Yeah.
So we've been renting from that same property management company for the last 6 years. So we're a success story for them. So
yeah. And that's what it comes down to. I mean, there was a lot of people Like we had said on that episode, if people go back and listen, that we, you had talked about how, like, you know, you reached out to Catholic Community Services.
Was I the did, first one. Yeah. Catholic Community Services are the ones that I went to try and get application fees covered so that we could apply to all these different places. Because I don't know if you know this, but back then it was like $50 to $100 per applicant.
Right, right.
And we didn't have that kind of money.
No, and there's been push by like the Eugene Renters Association to, like, you know, they lobbied to get it lowered to $10, I think, for the like the cap on applications. And some of those things are really good things, you know. Yeah. Some of the things when they put in like a rental increase cap, that actually backfired. And yeah. So now they're just like, oh, perfect, we'll raise the rent 15% a year.
Yeah.
You know, that was done by Kate Brown. But yeah, so, you know, we talked a little bit about who helped you. That's really what we really focused on the first episode. I wanted to have you on to talk about kind of an update about what's happening moving forward. For the last 2 years, you have been studying at LCC.
Yep.
Just received your second or two degrees, an associate's and a transfer degree, and you'll be moving on to the University of Oregon in the fall. This is huge. What are you studying?
I'm studying accounting.
Okay, that's amazing.
I love numbers.
That's amazing. So you had originally... side note, now you're a beaver and a duck, because you originally started school when we were young at 18 or whatever, back when we were still friends and just skating around town doing whatever. And you and I always used to butt heads about that because I hate the Beavers. But so no, it's a great school. But yeah, so talk about what the getting involved with LCC and starting back at school and the challenges of that, because I'm sure that after missing a lot of time, being a little older than the students, you could talk about that.
Oh my goodness. So I have had such a huge support system since starting school at Lane. So I started in fall of 2020, height of the pandemic, and everything was online, which really worked out best for me because I didn't want to be around people. I was an unmedicated schizophrenic having a hard time and trying to do better with themselves. So there was that. But what really got me going is there are programs at Lane. One of them I'm in called TRIO. It's for non-traditional low-income students, which I am both. And then another one is the Center for Accessible Resources. They work with people who have disabilities to get you accommodations for your classes, such as extended test times, testing center, assignment due date accommodations. There's all kinds of different ones that you can get depending on your disability, of course. So those programs, my advocates through them, my advisor and my advocate through those two have been the reason that I got so many scholarships to go to U of O. So it's been 3 long years, lots of tears, lots of long sleepless nights. But yeah, I got 2 degrees. I got my associate's in general studies, and then I got my Oregon transfer degree. And just this Monday, I registered for classes at University of Oregon.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's such a big deal.
Yeah, for someone that's known you a long time, this is a big thing, you know, because, I mean, it was bad. You know, there was a time I remember seeing you. I was riding down on a bus, and I saw you on 99, and I was like, I got to stop and say what's up, you know. And so this is just a huge deal. And you know, I wanted to, a side note about... you talked about your husband.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that it's like a godsend. The day that you found out you were pregnant, you're basically, your kid saved your life. That's the story that you told on my original episode. But then one thing about your husband, like, you guys met in your addiction.
We met in
on the streets, which this is like breaking barriers or, you know, it's usually that in recovery that, counselors will tell you, like, you should probably not be in a relationship. So let alone, you know, like a new
with
relationship or with the same person that you used with.
Yeah.
So it is a pretty big testament for your love for each other that you guys are now still together to this day and working through just normal stuff of married couples, you know, like having issues and then working it through and being stronger afterwards and that kind of stuff. And I just want to say that as a friend and knowing both of you, it's pretty incredible to see. So it's great to see.
Yeah, we've been together. We've been married 5 years. We've been together 8. And 2 of those years we were unhoused and addicted.
Yeah.
So we started out rough.
So you knew, I mean, one of the things about you that I know is that you've, you know, never stopped advocating for the houseless community and just wanted to come on and talk about just some of the sheer numbers, because I don't think that people are quite aware of the actual statistics of where we sit in Lane County today. I mean, because your story is so common and different reasons and variables of why people find themselves. But I mean, it's always... or not always, but it's very commonly mental health and or drugs, whatever comes first, right? Like, it's not, there's a lot of people that are homeless that are not ever a drug user. That's not, right. That's not right. It. There's just a lot of stuff. But a lot of times has to do with mental health, trauma, that kind of stuff. And so you've been advocating for the houseless community, but one of the things you talked to me about wanting to mention is just the sheer statistics, just numbers of how many people find themselves homeless in Lane County on any given night. So what are those numbers?
So on any given night, there are about 2,000 unsheltered, chronically homeless folks here in Eugene. And there's 3,000 total. So 1,000 of them find shelter of some sort, whether it be a car, a tent, a couch, a room. But 2,000 people are without shelter. And we're talking, that's 2 out of 3 is a huge deal.
And we don't have the exact number, but as far as numbers of beds, it's like in the 300 to 500 range.
Yeah, somewhere it's in there. About 300 to 500. And they're not even necessarily beds, because there's the parking program where people are allowed to park and sleep in their car. So we're not talking about necessarily ideal situations where people have their own space or their own bed. We're just talking about a safe place for them to sleep for the night.
This is the most difficult thing with this, is that everybody's not, there's so many different ideas. People have different ideas on how to combat it. But, you know, a lot of the ideas are such long-term solutions. They're like, why don't they get a job? And it's like, tonight?
Oh, my goodness. Let's talk about the folks that have jobs. Over 40% of the people on the streets have jobs.
Yeah.
We're talking full-time employment. They are not making a living wage. They can't afford housing.
That's exactly it. People want to blame, like I was saying, hinting at, oh, it's drugs and it's mental health.
Right.
And it's like, I know for me, struggling as I made poor choices. I'll be the first to admit it, and I will own those. But there was times where I wanted to give up, and it just seemed like, because I was drinking myself to death, basically, too. And, you know, and I was fortunate enough that I never found myself homeless. But, well, I mean, I kind of did, like, a few times. Yeah. I never had to sleep outside because I had people that helped me, and it was temporary enough that, like, my help didn't run out.
Right.
And I know that it was close, you know, but there, you know, there's times where I was between, and I was lucky. And that's, you know, that's the thing. It's like, you can only, it's a lot less cute to be couch surfing when you're in your 30s and on. I mean, when you're in your 20s, it's a party.
Couch surfing is an amazing accommodation that not everybody has the luxury to have.
Right.
So I'm really glad that you had that, because I also experienced a couch surfing situation when my son was born. And if I didn't have that couch, we would have been on the streets for sure. So I want to segue into something really quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
So my story is that of addiction, being unhoused, having schizophrenia. So I used that story and I got a full ride scholarship to the University of Oregon.
Yeah, which is huge.
I'm a Ford Family Foundation scholar.
Yeah, so tell us about that process. It's pretty... You know, there's not very many people that get this.
No, there is not. So it's a three-part process. You apply, and then you have to write some essays about yourself, which is probably the, like, I can write essays about anything and get a really good grade. But if you ask me to write an essay about myself,
right,
it's super difficult.
Right.
I'm like, what do I say? Who do I say? Like, how do I say it? But anyways, so you apply, you write some essays, and you either get through the first round or you don't. And then the second round, they go through and find with a fine tooth comb, they look through these applications again and they decide who they're going to interview for these scholarships. So I did the interview and I found out 2 weeks later that I got it.
Yeah.
I wept for hours, filled with joy. I couldn't believe it. This is a huge deal. Like, being a Ford Scholar is a really big deal. And I'm able to say that I am a Ford Scholar. But yeah. I also got a couple other scholarships. Speaking of scholarships, the Ford Family Foundation pays up to 90% of unmet college costs.
That's huge.
That includes housing, books, tuition, food, transportation. And then I got another scholarship, the U of O Diversity Excellence Scholarship. And that's for $6,500, which is a huge chunk of money. And then I got another scholarship through the Lindquist Business College for $1,000 for my accounting program. So basically, I get to go to school for free because I went through so much and I'm able to talk about it as a successful student now.
Right. Well, and then that's the thing about the story of recovery. What I learned
through my, you know, alcoholism and whatnot is that the best medicine is by helping others, you know? Mm-hmm. And when people reach out to you and say, what did you do to turn your life around? I'm like, you right now are healing me. Do you not understand that? That like this reciprocated compassion for each other and is what actually is the medicine for it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and obviously there's other issues we have to deal with as well. But yeah, this is a big deal and I'm really proud of you. And you have a lot to be proud of and this is exciting stuff.
Yeah. For the first time in my life, I'm proud of myself and my accomplishments. And I've got these tangible pieces of evidence in these diplomas that show me,
you know, it's like, sometimes that kind of, it sounds like boasting, but the reality is like, that's amazing because anybody that's gone through trauma knows that the hardest thing sometimes is to tell yourself that you're doing awesome.
Right. Right. You know? My brain is hardwired to expect bad things. So my psychiatrist and I were talking about this yesterday. The same thing that you just said, she said to me that people who go through trauma have a hard time accepting when good things happen to them. And I was like, is that what's going on with me? Because I've been experiencing a lot of anxiety lately, just tons of it. And so we brainstormed and stuff and we decided, yes, your brain is hardwired for trauma.
Yeah.
It's hardwired to think that the other shoe's going to drop.
Right. Like imposter syndrome and all that stuff.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah. That's something that I heard the first time I had ever heard about imposter syndrome. Literally, it was Michelle Obama was promoting her book. And I was watching some like The View or something randomly because I'm a huge fan of The View. No,
I love The View. Stop talking.
I work during the day. But anyway, so I was watching it and they were talking. She was talking about imposter syndrome. And I was just like, first of all, that's amazing that she's the one talking about it because it's Michelle Obama. And, you know, second of all, it's like this could affect everyone. I mean, I think first name that comes to mind would be like a Robin Williams, right? Where it's like just these incredible people that are like, I don't belong.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, just they're just misunderstood and they still struggle with a level of mental health. I think that the biggest issue that we see in mental health is people like to compare each other.
Yeah.
And I think that is just dangerous,
you know, because
it's like every single person has their battle and mental health is like having a balanced diet or exercising, you know, you have to maintain your health. And so by doing that, some of it's affirmation, like we were talking about, mm-hmm. being like, congrats, you know, you're doing great. You're doing, you know, you really have to be able to say that to yourself. And it's so difficult. I have such a hard time with that.
Yeah. Same.
Let's talk a little bit about mental health. You know, in the society, and one of the things you and I are going to talk a little bit about kind of like the social landscape and politics and whatnot, because that's what we do. You've been on the podcast talking about the impeachment, talking about different things. And the reason that I kept having you come on, not only are you my friend, but also, you know, when I started this podcast, I realized I'm like, I want to have voices that don't typically get heard from in a long form talking about social issues, because everybody, you hear about these pundits talking about, oh, what this means for Trump and what this means for Biden. What you don't hear is the actual citizens for an hour.
Right.
You hear
like, how does this affect me?
So I think there's value there. And I'm just an average dude. I just started this shit because it was a fun little hobby, you know, but I've learned a lot and whatnot. So I wanted to talk a little bit about mental health. I mean, every time there's like a tragedy, like a mass shooting, the first thing you hear is, well, we just need to do something about mental health.
Right.
What does that even mean? Like, what does that look like?
Okay. So first of all, there's a lot of us who struggle with mental health issues who aren't committing acts of gun violence. So I don't necessarily think it's a mental health issue. But let's talk about what that looks like. What does it look like to attack mental health and get people on board to do better and be, the best versions of themselves?
And it's coming from the people that say that the government should actually have a smaller role in our lives.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know if you're going to legislate our brain, you know, so that's going to be difficult. I think the only thing that we can do as people, and it is our responsibility, and I don't think it's the government's responsibility to combat mental health. I think it is the people's responsibility. And what we have to do is show a little bit of compassion for each other, show a little bit of empathy. And I mean, I think that there's hypocrisy to go around. I think that when you live in a two-party system, you're obviously going to butt heads and there's going to be finger pointing.
Right.
So I'm not trying to say which side is better or make a false equivalence. None of that shit matters.
No.
But what I will say is that, come on, guys. Like, we all need to understand that we can actually just take a deep breath, take a step back from ourselves and say, like, think about how our actions affect others, you know? Yeah. And that's what I would really like to see from society. But when it comes to mental health, it's going to come down to, you know, conversations. I'm worried about if the answer to mental health is medication. And that's the only thing. I've been pretty vocal. I don't know if I've said it clearly or openly on the podcast, but I started taking a serotonin booster, a while back, and partially why I had a little bit of drop off with my podcast. I'll be the first to admit it, 'cause yeah. it changed me a little bit, where in the beginning I had to adjust to it. There were some side effects and I felt off.
Yeah.
But then I started to notice that I was like, wait a minute, there's that joy that I hadn't seen since I was 13 years old and different things, yeah, 'cause of trauma that I've been through. So, it's been really positive for me, but I was really reluctant to take medication because there's many, 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 many side effects with different, yeah, medications.
There's side effects. There's a stigma against people taking meds. Right. Like, I've gotten so, like, okay, I take handfuls of pills twice a day and it keeps me sane and helps me be the best version of myself. Mind you, I've been through the gamut. Like, I'm still going through med changes and I've been dealing with this stuff. So I started school fall 2020. I started seeing a therapist in December of 2020. And I finally got in with a psychiatrist about a year after that. So it's been a long journey to get where I'm at right now. And it's a continuous journey. My goal with my psychiatrist right now is to have all of my med changes be totally done with by the time I start school in the fall. Because med changes, like you said, you had side effects.
Oh, yeah.
I have side effects. I had side effects last week. That's why I had to see my psychiatrist yesterday on an emergency appointment. I was like, hey, I'm panicked. This, yeah, sucks.
Yeah.
I just started this new medication.
Yeah.
So,
and so I just really, when we get into these conversations, we're going to be seeing it. Hopefully we are having these conversations on a national level, but be tread lightly when I'm saying this to everybody, but you know, we need to tread lightly as far as like letting the government decide all that stuff.
I want to talk about that. Let's talk about the government being involved, because I think the first step to really combating mental health issues is giving everybody fucking medical care.
Yeah.
And seriously.
I mean, yeah. And I think a lot of the mental health issues we see in this country are coming from poor leadership. Yeah. I mean, you turn on the, yeah, news, and that's the media's fault. And we could be here for days talking about that, but it's like, I joke about it sometimes where I say, like, I don't really trust anybody that's like, doesn't have mental health issues. You know, like, I don't really, how could you not? We live in such a time, in such a divided time where people are straight exhausted.
Yeah.
And it's either overworked or not. I mean, yeah, it could be that, but it's literally like stress levels of, I just want people to get along, you know?
Yeah.
And it's gotten to that point, and I think everybody's learning how much social media, how much they need to like, maybe take a step back from the, like, you and I are the first two that will admit that we've been vicious little keyboard warriors.
Oh my God. I have stepped back so much. Medication is awesome. I'm not constantly online trying to fight with people on these news sites.
Yeah. You know, I've seen some of the stuff that you've you were exposing and
I did the racist,
doxing racists and stuff. Yep. And it's, you know, you feel like you're doing good things and maybe you are at some point, but at the end of the day, it's still feeding into the negativity. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That's a whole different thing. So speaking of all that, speaking of people getting along, you know, I wanted to segue into the 2024 election.
Oh, God.
This is not a good segue, but,
no.
You know, because it's an incumbent with Biden, probably going to be the nominee. I don't see any reason to think otherwise. I think that the Democrats are just basically convinced that that's what people want, even though 0% of people want that.
0% of people want that.
Probably
not
0%, but probably close to like 30. You know, like, it's such a small number.
If I was 100% of people, it would be 0%.
Those are great numbers. So anyways, you know, since there is an incumbent president, you're going to see town halls every night on CNN with the Republican candidates and, you know, Mike Pence, Chris Christie, Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, these people, their only hope is that Donald Trump is in jail by the time that the election comes, which is a likelihood. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, there's a percentage, 100% of 0%, whatever you just said.
Yeah, right.
37 counts this documents case. And the more that I hear about it, the more that I think, wow, this is actually pretty egregious. There's conspiracy to destroy evidence that's, I mean, I think open and closed. There's like, yeah, a smoking gun evidence with this one. I don't know if this is, I hate to say this one, but because it does to some people feel like it's just an attack on Trump, but it's like, well, when you're when you constantly break the law.
It's, yeah,
you
know. We're literally living through a historical event with this indictment. It's wild to think about, because my kid is going to read about this when he's in high school, and he's probably going to ask me questions and be like, Mom, what happened? Well, yeah. First of all, he said that he didn't declassify shit. And then he said, as soon as he gets that shit, that it was already declassified.
Your kid said this? He was going to declassify stuff? That's cool.
Trump.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yes, my five-year-old curses.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't.
No, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see it. What I'm really hoping doesn't happen, and I think is going to happen, is that the Democrats are gonna push Biden, and there's going to be the divide, and it's so close no matter what we do. It's like it's margin, paper-thin margin between the two sides on the voting blocks. And so I think what's going to happen is that these indictments and these cases are going to take longer than the election. Trump will get elected, and then they will be pardoned.
That's what I think.
Which I think is going to lead to chaos in the streets.
Well, they're doing all the, like, the Supreme Court ruling against the voter suppression. That was a big deal. That happened, what, yesterday?
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. It's going to be in the 100 range of charges against Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And
that's,
you know,
so much.
So I don't even know. I mean, the candidates, I think everybody knows Mike Pence. You know, I just think it's funny. You showed it up on a Harley. Here's Mike Pence on his Harley.
Oh, my goodness. But, I missed that.
Yeah. It's just scary. I have seen with my dad. I was talking to him. I always talk about my dad on the pod and like how he's a conservative guy and he's a Trump guy. And he was telling me last time I talked to him, he was like, I think a lot of people want to move on from that guy. And I'm like, that's big.
Oh, you know? From Trump?
So, yeah.
Oh.
That he's already starting to kind of hint at that. So we'll see. I don't know how someone could support this guy, because they just see it as, I mean, we're just two different worlds.
I know how they can support him. They're fucking racist.
Yeah.
I mean, make America great again. That's some KKK shit right there.
Yeah.
Let's just be real.
Yeah.
Let's just be real.
You know, I've been coming to the conclusion that I want to be bridge people together, but there is a reality that we have to face, that there's two camps in this country. There's anti-racist and there's racist.
Right.
That is a fact.
Right.
Now you can church it up a little bit and you can make it a little softer so that you can kind of bridge that divide, because it's not a winning strategy to bridge the world to just say you're a bad guy, you know, whichever side you're on. It's not working. The Democrat, it's saying that like liberals are whatever term they want to use, and just being like, liberals, they're bad people. Like, I can't get down with that attitude, because I don't feel that about Republicans. Like, they're bad. I'm saying Donald Trump is bad. Not every single person that's a Republican is bad. Not even probably half are bad. Well, who knows?
I was a Republican for 18 years. Well,
my experience, I've got a lot of people that I admire that are conservative, and there's reasons that they believe in a limited government. Like I was saying before about how when it comes to mental health, I don't think government's the right person to decide, you know, to fix this.
Right.
We have
they,
to do this as
they
society.
Are a tool. They are a tool that needs to be utilized in order to get everybody health insurance so that they can access the services that are going to help them out the most.
Right. And so the thing that I see, it's like we can soften that blow a little bit by, instead of saying it's anti-racist and racist, I like the shock value of it, but some people it's not effective. So you just have to say there's people with empathy and there's people without. Which side do you want to be on?
You're either doing the work or you're not.
Right. And so it's about empathy. I see that. And that's the part, you know, because you can have an argument, you can have a debate on what the government's role is in some of the issues that we face.
Right.
And so you can argue that just spending money and throwing money at it hasn't worked, you know, and especially because of the way that we have this obstructionist system on both sides. It happens when if there's an incumbent Republican, you're going to have obstruction from the Democrats because they think that they're fighting to save democracy.
Right.
Whereas, you know, the conservatives, I've already seen the response to this indictment where on Twitter, you're seeing people compare it to the JFK assassination. I saw this post. They're like, this is like the worst thing that's happened since the JFK assassination.
Okay.
And I literally commented, I said, just go ahead and do it. Just compare it to the crucifixion, because I know you want to, but yeah. It's a scary time, and I don't think that there's any safe haven on where you can turn where it's like people will get behind this, because no matter what, half the people are going to hate it. And
that is a statistical probability.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't even think we have to really talk about much about the election, considering I know that neither of us would ever vote Trump. And at this point,
no. I mean, you know, I'm really sad that Biden's the ticket because I am. Yeah.
Well, I think people should talk about this because the age thing that people want to avoid, you know, I don't think it's a number. I think it's an individual base thing.
I think that the man that's supposed to represent me and my interests has nothing in common with me. Like, we got to be real here. The president and Congress are supposed to be my elected representatives that represent me as a person. I don't know of any of them besides, oh my God, what's her name? I just
Katie
forgot.
Porter.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So besides Katie Porter, like, she's one that I see myself in as a mother and, you know, a future career woman. Yeah. But our elected officials don't represent most of our community.
Yeah. No.
And that's the sad part.
Yeah.
It's hard to relate to them.
How do we change that? You get out and you run and you know, and you get involved with it.
Yeah, but who wants to run when the government's being held hostage by different parties at different times? Like the whole debt ceiling thing that just happened with the Republicans basically weaponizing the whole entire thing.
Yeah.
And making it so we're going to lose 1.7 million jobs if this happens. And they're like, nope, we want unreasonable requests.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's how it works. Obstructionist government, like I said. Like, it's like literally, like, you have minority rule in that, where you have the people that can fight it because it's so close of a divide. And unfortunately, the answer to this is the pendulum swinging so far the other way that the people that actually subscribe to that conservative value, they're going to feel even less represented.
Yep.
So it's like, yep, until we can find a way to compromise, then, and I'm not trying to, you know, kick the football to the left or move the goalpost to the left or to the right. But unfortunately, that's where we're at because people are unwilling to be adults about it. We have to be willing to compromise, or, you know, it's like I see young people posting about stuff and just saying like third party candidates and stuff. I'm like, oh my God, we've had this conversation now. Like, how many election cycles in a row have we had it where it's like, like, even I'm a Bernie guy, and I just realized that it's like, that shit is just not going to happen.
No.
Like, and so, I mean, I don't know. It's pretty frustrating.
Yeah, the corporations are running the show at this point. Let's just follow the money and get real.
Yeah. Well, Blair Conrad, hey, you know, this is really cool. It's always fun to have you on the podcast to talk about different stuff. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing to advocate for the houseless community. What kind of stuff did you want to touch on? Is there anything that we didn't touch on?
Yeah, let's talk about being unhoused and how much it costs.
Sure.
So I was doing some research, and based on policing, food, hospital visits, sanitation, and jail costs, an unhoused person costs taxpayers about $35,000 per year. Now, if you flip that and you give them supportive housing where they're safe and not out in the elements and not stuck in survival mode and not getting arrested for sleeping outside, that only costs about $12,800 per year. So we could save money just by simply giving these people supportive housing.
Yeah. How much have you read up on this governor's new emergency act? Now, I know that in Springfield and towns like these are very different towns, first of all. But Springfield,
yeah,
Cottage Grove, Cresswell, right? These are very, those three towns are different levels of Oregonian towns. but they are, I believe, all had bans on camping in town.
Yeah,
right?
You can't sit,
and
sleep,
can't
or lie
do,
in
and
public.
You can't do that now. And so I have mixed feelings. And you and I are going to disagree on some of these things, and that's okay. You know, mm-hmm, what I'm saying? Because I have mixed feelings on how I look at public areas becoming like campgrounds, you know, because there's a use that's just, well, at a certain point though, it's like, it's a crisis. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, when somebody is homeless. Now, this is difficult because Springfield has stricter rules than Eugene. And a lot of people in Springfield, they want it that way, you know?
I mean, they voted for it.
Right.
So.
And so this is the difficult conversation. What do we say to those people that are just like, we have to be willing to help. Now, There's been changes in Springfield with city government passing to where they've extended, like, you can have more RVs on church parking lots, and they're small little gains. Mm-hmm. And I'm not opposed to the idea of it being like, we have to be careful. You can't just like open it up. Like how Washington Jefferson now, I don't know how much money has been spent.
Yeah.
It's just a really difficult thing.
I think it's 1.2 million or something like that.
Yeah. And then they open up and it looks the same.
Let's talk about what it means to criminalize homelessness for someone who is unhoused. Let's talk about that process. No, sure. So sitting, sleeping, or lying in public spaces was banned in Springfield. So you find an unhoused person sleeping, you give them a ticket. They get a court date with that ticket, okay? So because they're unhoused, they don't have a way of getting to that court date because where are they going to put their stuff? Do they even know what day or time it is? Actually, I know when I was unhoused, I didn't know what day or time it was most of the time. Yeah. I didn't have a phone. So they miss their court date. Then you get a failure to appear, which is a felony. And because of that felony, you get a bench warrant and then you get arrested. You get thrown in jail. Now you have a felony on your record. Places don't rent to felons.
Or hire.
People doesn't hire felons.
Yeah.
So this creates a chronically unhoused person that costs $35,000 a year to the taxpayer. So why would you criminalize homelessness just to make more people homeless for longer?
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make any sense. But that's the process that they go through. It all starts with them existing outside without money is what it boils down to. That's literally what it is. They're existing outside without money because there's other places where you can camp. Like if it's, you know, Black Friday and you want to go to Best Buy and get a PS5, you're camping on that sidewalk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody gets arrested for that.
Right.
But anyways, that's my two cents because, I mean, the story happened. It happens to everybody that I knew on the streets. I was lucky enough to never get arrested or get a ticket for sleeping outside. And I was at Washington Jefferson Park for a really long time. So I managed to dodge that bullet, but it did.
It's a vicious cycle. I mean, it's the same thing we talked about, you know, the decriminalization of drugs. I've talked about this on the podcast where it's a vicious cycle where before the way that the war on drugs was working was like, you know, we're going to punish you into submission to turn your life around, which is not what works.
20 years for a weed charge.
And I mean, there is for marijuana and stuff. Obviously, there's going to be, I've always said this, like, you know, for meth and stuff like that. Like, if you're going to be doing meth and you steal my lawnmower, you're going to go to jail for stealing my lawnmower. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not about, I don't really care about the other part. If people are not, you know, the decriminalization now, but there's a flip side to that. I'm not trying to tie the two together. First of all, homelessness and drugs.
Right.
But these are the issues that we face in this state, you know, that I was talking to a police officer, one of my customers, and he was explaining to me the challenges of 110 of ballot measure 110 and the decriminalization. And he is a very compassionate, pretty liberal thinking guy, you know, the way that he approaches stuff. And he was just saying that as it's set right now, it's not going to be an effective system. We have to get the treatment facilities to be able to support this. So again, it's like, it's going to be more of an investment long-term. Shout out to Robert McDonald. He says the system is intentionally rigged to perpetuate poverty.
Absolutely.
And that's
correct.
A fact, Robert. Thank you so much for tuning in. I mean, this is what I talk about. This is what the Spent the Rent podcast is all about, like how there's a widening gap. And unfortunately, with COVID, it got even wider.
Oh, yeah.
And you had a theft from wealthy people that jumped on and said that my business is struggling and all that kind of stuff. And
so,
LaDonna Skate Cruz, I think that's it. Skater Cruz.
Hey, LaDonna.
She said, yes, Blair, keep on being awesome. Criminalize is not a solution for being unhoused. Thank you so much, LaDonna, for reaching out and watching the podcast. Thank you guys all for tuning into this and commenting. You're getting this on YouTube. Currently, we're going to do a replay this on Facebook, but there were some technical difficulties. So I think that this is a chance for me to remind people where that they can access the podcast, and we'll bounce back and forth. We'll go back to what we were talking about. But, you know, the podcast is available on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, and multiple Facebook pages, my personal profile, and on the Spent the Rent podcast page, and also on my website, strpod.com. You can also sponsor the podcast on Patreon, or you, PayPal or on Venmo. Gosh, there's too much.
Venmo, my too many favorite. Apps.
But if you just go to my website, strpod.com, you can sponsor the show. And then what that would do, a sponsorship would help me elevate the streams by, I'd like to start paying a little bit more for advertising to get the word out. I've done this all without, all organic, and it's the time now that we need to grow it. But yeah, I mean, this is what we do. We talk about stories that are underrepresented. Blair Conrad, you are like the epitome of that. And this has been a great thing to see your, you know, we've been friends for a long time, but like to see the progress. The first episode was really good. If you'd like to go back and listen to that, it's episode 14. So
episode 14.
This is episode number 199. And the next episode is going to be 200, which is going to be a huge milestone. And then I'm going to stop doing the podcast.
Are you serious?
I don't think so.
Oh, I was going to say, how am I supposed to get the word out that I'm awesome? I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
LaDonna had one more comment. It says, it also creates a problem for other abled persons like myself that cannot sit. I have to stand or lay down. This puts me and others at a risk of police violence.
Yeah, this is another thing. When you criminalize homelessness, you're criminalizing people with disabilities as well.
Right.
So we need to recognize that our society is not only classist, it's very ableist.
Yeah.
And we do not protect the vulnerable at all.
This is the difficult thing too, because the conversations we have, a lot of people want to just, they want to shoot it down when you start having progressive conversations, yeah. Right? And then
we're probably pissing a lot of people off.
And then fast forward 20 years and it's the commonplace. Yeah. You know, there is I don't know. That's a different conversation. We could be here for days because there is a lot of issues that people want to debate about. A lot of issues that actually don't matter to the masses, that they matter to some. But like, you know, but typically that's been my experience of what we've seen. I mean, think about when we were kids, the way that people viewed the gay community.
Oh my God.
Compared to today.
Yeah.
You know, and marriage equality specifically.
Right.
You know, because there's obviously still a ton of issues with the treatment of the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
Blair Conrad, thank you so much for being my friend and for coming on the podcast. I've been hinting behind the scenes about asking you to be a co-host of the show.
Love that.
So we
if
may
you ever want to have me on again.
We may be attempting something different like that, because I'm getting a little bit stale with doing the one-on-one guests.
Hey, what are you doing for your 200th episode?
I don't know yet.
Can I interview you?
Maybe. We did that before, so maybe that would be fun. So yeah. we'll work on that. I'm cutting back a little bit because it's hot in the studio room. As you can see, we're both perspirating, because if I put a fan on, then you'll hear
the fan.
So we rocked some technical difficulties today. So thank you everyone that tuned in and checked it out. And again, you know, if you'd like to support the show, you can go to strpod.com. Blair Conrad.
And if you'd like to support me, my Venmo is @BlairConrad.
Perfect. You never know.
Hey,
so we're going to get out of here. Thank you so much. We're going to end this one with a song. This is actually a song that is unreleased, something that I'm working on. And I figured, hey, why not just kind of put this one out there? This is a song by me, Patty Rose, featuring Imperfect. It's called Some Things.
Things, they stay the same. So when are you gonna change? Some things, they stay the same. So when are you gonna change? Some things, they stay the same. So when are you gonna change? Some things, they stay the same. So when are you gonna change?
Some things don't change when they ingrain. Keep hope inside our brain, or we're only inviting pain. Losing focus on our aim. Some things don't change without some pain. We're showing what we gain, some hope from all the strain. My world and now our brain is hoping for some sort of way to coordinate our fate. That's for some sort of change, but we sort of found a place. Some things don't change, they go away. To corner them out of space, we go to now attain what we wanted, we became. What we wanted, we became. But we gotta be the change that we wanna see attain.
Things, they stay the same. So when are you gonna change? Some things, they stay the same. So when are you gonna change? Some things, they stay the same. So when are you gonna change? Some things, they stay the same. So when are you gonna change?
I'ma dance like Ghosty, get the most. jokes that are roasting. All you jokes that are boasting, toasting to a better pedigree. But with white supremacy, you can choke on a boo. Hypocrisy is your strong suit. I'ma dance like Posty, get the most out of roasting. All you jokes that are boasting, toasting to a